This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. It's now 7:35 a.m. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani and Julian Ng this morning. Now, as we take a look at the business news today, let's start in China, where the banking regulator there has unveiled aggressive measures to restrain peer-to-peer lending. It's warned that almost half of the 4,000-odd online lending platforms are, to use their words, problematic. And we're talking about a business that is about worth $93 billion in China, the P2P lending sector. Huge, very.
Yeah, well, $93 billion, you've got to put it into context because China has a very big shadow banking problem. And I guess this P2P clampdown is a part of the efforts to clamp down the shadow banking problem. We are talking about between 5 to 50 trillion renminbi. Wow. In the shadow banking system. That's between 5 and 80% of the GDP, China's GDP, right? So it's a huge problem for China. And this is where the people who are engaged in lending, they do all sorts of Ponzi schemes, and they prey on the greed of people to get high interest rates. And the problem here is the timing mismatch, the size mismatch of the sums that are being lent to. They lend out to people, and then they take money from these other people, and they don't have the ability to repay them at a certain time period. So China is very afraid that this kind of thing will blow up.
This is on top of the fact that they are growing their debt and non-performing loans year on year. But my biggest question right now is that when you police something like this, something this big, can you do it? And I think in the answer for China, I think they can, because much of these things are happening online, and China has the ability to be very, you know, strong in terms of or iron-fisted in terms of managing their online content and online providers. So I guess they might be able to get this out and enforce this particular proposal.
But the demand for P2P lending, right, Jules, is usually from, you know, businesses who can't get traditional banking loans, right? People who don't have collateral or probably not a good credit history. So they opt for the online lending version?
Not necessarily. That could still be the case, what you say, but not necessarily. I think the attraction of P2P is that the borrower can get interest rates for cheaper, and the lender can get high interest rates than if you went through the middleman, which is the normal banking channels. So I think it's not just about quality, although that comes into play as well. And I think that China's regulator, the CSRC, or the the CBRC, China's Banking Regulatory Commission, has imposed some rules. And I don't know whether these rules will have enough bite, because it's allowing an individual to borrow up to, let's say, about $30,000 from a single P2P platform, or a total of 1 million yuan, either 200,000 yuan from one, or 1 million yuan from combined P2Ps altogether. And they also impose rules on companies which can borrow 1 million yuan from one, or a total of 5 million from a combination of P2Ps. And this is really complicated. I know that, Ibrahim, you're saying that it's easy to monitor because it's online, but I guess it adds a layer of complexity to this whole thing. And I think if you add up the potential of 1.5 billion people in China with the ability to borrow from the P2P, can balloon. It can be something that can balloon as well.
But if you look at what China's doing, you compare that to, say, what Singapore is doing. Granted, two very different financial system structures, but Singapore now is reviewing the rules for venture capital firms. They want to draw more capital into Singapore to help their fintech startups.
And I think this is the bigger question. Question, right? Is this part of the shadow banking business, or is this part of the fintech problem that all these central banks seem to want to regulate? We just carried this news, I think yesterday or the day before, on Japan central bank trying to regulate fintech, or make fintech be born out of themselves.
Part of their operations.
Yeah, so this is a big problem, right? It's both shadow banking and fintech. That's why I think, you know, smaller markets like Singapore, in terms of the population, not in terms of the volume of transaction, might be easily regulated as opposed to, say, well, you know, China or Japan or
Singapore is not necessarily trying to peddle fintech to their people or fintech products to their people. Uh-huh. They are trying to attract fintech money yeah. to the financial center to set up there right. In Singapore, right? So it's really two very different trajectories from between Singapore and China. China has got the shadow banking problem to worry about. And all these other countries are trying to go full on into fintech. Even Malaysia, we're trying to attract both fintech money and fintech businesses and fintech products that are being sold to the public as well. And that BOJ move that you mentioned is really significant. It's huge because I have not heard of any central bank intending to put fintech as part of their programs.
I mean, yeah. You talk about central banks regulating or coming up with guidelines or having a regulatory sandbox, but not to make it part of their operations,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. But they've been doing crazy stuff. I'm not talking about just the Bank of Japan, but also central banks. Who would have thought this time last year negative interest rate would be the talk of the town?
Well, yeah. They're quite exactly. experimental. But I have to ask, when it comes to central banks and fintech, right? I think there's a bit of a conflict of interest here because, who is the end user that you are protecting? You're protecting banks or you're protecting the consumers? Right?
Yeah, I think that's a very thin line. But I think the threats and challenges to banks have happened before. Right. And for example, with bond issuance yeah. long time ago, people thought that, if corporations can go to issue bonds, what will happen to the banks? The banks themselves participated in the bond issuing process and they made in the process a lot of money out of that. You just have to think of how much Goldman Sachs made out of the 1MDB bond issues, right? So today, I think the banks are also in a position to participate in fintech platforms because they're very deep-pocketed.
Well, let's come back to China because China State Shipbuilding Corporation is looking to buy a huge chunk of shares in the planned IPO of Postal Savings Bank of China. Now, China State Shipbuilding, they want to buy about $2 billion worth of shares in the $7 billion plus IPO.
I don't know what I feel about this idea of cornerstones. And I mean, the whole reason why you want to buy into shares is because the fundamentals are good and not because a cornerstone investor is supporting the price, right? And how does the cornerstone investor be accountable to their stakeholders? I mean, in this case, we're talking about the China State Shipbuilding Corporation buying into China Post. What are the related synergies there?
Well, I read that they wanted to diversify out of shipping. So this is part of their move to kind of get out of the shipping business. But I also share your concerns, Jules, because, I was reading that bankers say that this could be the biggest cornerstone commitment ever in Hong Kong IPOs.
$2 billion.
Yeah, I mean, it's massive, right? So I think it skews the way the IPO is.
Is
reflected.
So if you're a corporation, if you're a for-profit entity, the two things that matter most to you is access to market and access to capital. Just like the story that we just carried just now. People will do no matter what, right, to get capital, particularly when they are inhibited by other means. They can't get to the banks, bad credit history, too small, no collateral, new businesses like a startup. They will do whatever they can.
But
and
who,
right now, China State is doing whatever they can.
Well, China Post is the company here that's trying to get capital, yeah. and China State is the one providing the capital. And who's winning or who's losing? Because the news is being touted as China State Shipbuilding Corporation as a cornerstone investor is supporting the price of China Post. So something's got to give, right? Either China Post is losing out or China State Shipbuilding is losing out. Or why don't we just, as with everything that's in the stock market, leave it to the markets? Why should there be somebody supporting the IPO?
But I mean, who are the people who own these companies, right? I think it boils down to perhaps the same people, left pocket, right pocket.
Possibly.
Kind of,
possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. And this raises the question of governments and business again. So we don't only have this problem in Malaysia, but we also have this huge SOE problem monoliths in China where the government is just trying to unravel the SOE problem, and yet here they are coughing out $2 billion to take up a postal stake.
Very quickly, let's take a look at the South African rand, because yesterday it collapsed 3.5% against the US dollar in a matter of minutes in New York trade. Something happening there with the finance minister, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, Pravin Gordhan, who's the South African minister of finance, who's very widely respected and a leading reformer in the South African financial system. He was arrested by a special police elite police force in South Africa called Hawks. And a lot of conspiracy theories going on, mainly because Mr. Gordhan does not want to approve the fiscal recklessness of President Zuma in South Africa. Like Zuma wants to buy, wants to spend $60 billion buying up these nuclear plants, and apparently Russians are involved as well. Also, Pravin Gordhan has been linked to a secret department set up, a CIA-like operation set up to spy on Zuma. So
he's denied it, though. He's denied it until now.
It's very bad.
I don't know why we call it a secret. The whole world knows about it already.
Well, he's denied that it ever exists, but apparently, you know, there's back talk. Yeah. So we'll see how that happens. I have to say, this is quite scandalous drama around the world.
So, the South African rand has done very well since the beginning of this year, improving substantially against the US dollar. But because of this news, and because of the fact that Gordhan is really respected, it has weakened sharply again over the last few days.
7:46 right now. We'll come back with more business news, a look at the local scene after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.